Please join me in welcoming our speaker tonight, Polly Pistol from the Third Legacy Group in Bellingham, Washington.
This is great. My name is Polly Pistol and I'm an alcoholic. Okay, help yourself. By God's grace and a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I have a home group, and that's the Third Legacy Group in Bellingham, Washington. And I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. And those are the things that I need to be a member in good standing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am delighted to be here. Thank you so much, Chris, for inviting me. God, you guys are gorgeous. It seems like every time I come, this meeting just gets bigger. You guys are just gorgeous. So thank you for being so welcoming and all the good energy. So great group. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I should share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. And I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. One of the things that I want to tell you is that today I am busier in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous than I have ever been. I sponsor more people than I've ever sponsored, and I'm into more service than I've ever been into. And there's a very good reason for that, because at 29 years of sobriety, I have so much to lose. And I absolutely love my life. I love the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. And I have a fabulous husband. I met him right in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me to tell all of you that he sends his best. He sent me. I know. I know it's so gushy, but it's really good. It's really good. It's amazing. I have so much to be grateful for, and I'm so grateful to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful to the God I found in these rooms. But my husband on the 19th of September had open heart surgery. And I tell you, it's amazing. It's amazing when you get that close. You know, it's scary. But the good news is that we have Alcoholics Anonymous and we have each other, and you know, it's just great today. And all those things that I thought were really important, you know, we talk about that in the preamble: money, property, and prestige. You know, all of a sudden, none of that seemed really that important. It's amazing how you can get right down to the line, and the most important thing was just to have this precious man, and I'm really grateful for that today, and I'm grateful for that kind of gratitude, because I found that here. I found that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a person who's living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and be a real alcoholic, because I am a real alcoholic. And I am a real alcoholic who does not come from alcoholic parents. My parents were not alcoholic. Now, my daddy died at 60 years old, and he had 60 years of sobriety. My mother died at 87 years old, and she had 87 years of sobriety. Now, my parents were not the least bit impressed with my sobriety. Their deal is if you'd have just never drank, none of those things would have happened to you anyway. In fact, I never even met an alcoholic until I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in the military. My husband was in the military. We were in the military for 20 years. And I saw all these people, and I'm here to tell you today that none of those people are in AA that I knew, and none of them need to be. I was the only alcoholic. So I didn't even really know what an alcoholic was. You know, I'd seen the Days of Wine and Roses and I'll Cry Tomorrow. In fact, about a month ago, I watched I'll Cry Tomorrow on demand. So if you've ever seen that, that was great. But I didn't even know anything about the disease of alcoholism. So I am a real alcoholic. And I am so grateful that my parents were not alcoholic, that I didn't know an alcoholic, because I'm here to tell you, if I'd have had one way to blame this on anybody or anything, I tried to blame it on the U.S. Air Force. I am also an only child. I tried to blame it on the fact that I'm an only child. I tried to blame it on the fact that I was raised Southern Baptist. You know, I was just raised in this religion where, you know, these preachers would stand up behind the podium and slam their fist and reach out into the congregation and say things like, if you've thought it, you've done it. And I don't know if you're an alcoholic of my kind, but an alcoholic of my kind is going to think it a long time before I take a drink. You know, I'm going to think about it. And I just, you know, all of this stuff was, I just, you know, God, how did I get so bad so fast? So I tried to blame the Baptist church. I tried everything I could to blame it on. And there was nothing I could blame the disease of alcoholism on. And, of course, I go to treatment. I am a person who went to treatment. And 29 years ago, they had treatment centers. I hear a lot of people say they didn't have treatments. They had them. And I went for 6 weeks, so I know they had them. And I'm not an advocate for treatment centers. I got sent there against my will, and I'll tell you about that later. But I would sit in the treatment center, and I would hear these people tell these horrific stories about all these things that happened to little boys and girls that should never happen to little boys and girls. And I would look at them, and I'd say, well, I know why you're an alcoholic, but why am I an alcoholic? Why am I an alcoholic? But today I understand, because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me why I'm an alcoholic. It tells me that I have an obsession of the mind and an allergy to the body. And that's why I'm an alcoholic. It tells me that I am a person that when I take a drink of alcohol, I cannot guarantee the result of that drink. I'm a real alcoholic. That's what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me. All of those other things, I'm sure, contribute to what happens to us in life. But I am a person who I did not come from alcoholic parents. I have a tendency to create alcoholics, but I didn't come from alcoholism. But the deal is that I was always looking for something, some excuse to make me have a reason so I could blame it on someone else. Now, I don't know if any of you are like that, but that's the kind of person I am. And I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when you begin to tell me that I am going to have to be accountable and responsible for my actions, past and present. This is what I'm going to have to do in order to stay sober. And I never, ever wanted to do that. That's why I love this meeting. This meeting has structure. There's people who have jobs. I love that. There's strong sponsorship here. I love that. I love that kind of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love meetings with a lot of structure. I love people who are doing the book and the people who are working with other alcoholics. I love that. Lots of sponsorship. Because I don't know about you, but if someone hadn't told me how to do it, I wouldn't know how to do it. I mean, the very best I could do with my life got me a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the very best I could do. So I'm grateful for that kind of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful for that kind of accountability. And anyway, today I understand that I have a disease, and it's spiritual in nature. And I love to hear people a lot of times in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about the spiritual side of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know anything about the spiritual side. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me the main object of this book is to find a power greater than yourself that can solve your problems. What I need to do is to find a God of my understanding. And that God of my understanding is what's going to keep me clean and sober. And because of that, I am able to have a relationship today with a God that I was terrified of, absolutely terrified of. And I could never have found that God had I not taken a set of steps. And because of taking those steps, the 12th step tells me, because of taking the steps, I have had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Now, I'm Southern born and raised, and I have always believed that men were put on earth to take care of women. Well, I have married this man, and he is a SAC pilot. And this man is going to be gone, and he's going to be gone for years at a time. And I'm going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And I have never, ever wanted to be responsible for myself. And if the truth was known, I still don't want to be responsible for myself. But my husband doesn't want the job either. So, and you guys tell me I have to be responsible and accountable if I'm going to stay sober. One of the things I love about Clancy is he talks about taking actions contrary to the way you feel. Just because I feel it doesn't mean I do it. Just stand still. You'll feel different in 5 seconds, you know. But that's it. Taking actions contrary to the way I feel. Well, this man was going to be gone for years at a time. And you see, I've got this kind of personality. And my personality is that I think that you ought to be able to read my mind. You ought to be able to, you know, you ought to be able to make me happy. And I don't know if any of you have done this, but, you know, I was born and raised in Texas, and we puff up. I don't know if any of you puff up. But we puff up, and, you know, somebody says, "What's wrong?" "Nothing." But the truth is, your responsibility is to make me happy. And if you don't make me happy, you don't love me. I love what Clancy says. Clancy says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. You see, I can, you know, the book talks about it. I either want to be at the top of the pile or at the bottom of the heap. You know, I have a hard time just being normal. There's no such word like that. There's no word like that for us. Is there normal? You know, I just don't want to be in the middle. You know, I'm either going to be the best of the best or the baddest of the baddest. Just don't want to be in the middle. I want to have someone else doing it for me. Anyway, I married this man, and we get stationed in our first duty station, and I get this little invitation in the mail. It's from the base commander's wife, and she's having this little coffee. And she has invited all of us second lieutenant's wives that are on the base. And here we go to this coffee. There we all sit. And this lady is standing up behind a podium that morning, just much like I'm doing tonight. And she began to tell us what we were going to do to enhance our husband's career. That we were going to have the right dinner parties, go to the right dinner parties, attend this function, attend that function. That we were going to wear the right length gloves. All the things that we were going to do to enhance our husband's career. And I sat there absolutely terrified. I was so terrified to even attend that function. But as you see, I was 18 years old. I knew that all these women were educated, they were sophisticated, and they were so much better than me. Now, what I have learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is you can be and do anything you want to be and do. As long as you are in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you stay sober and work the steps and find a God of your understanding, I was told, "Polly, if you do those things, you can be anything you want to be." Well, what has happened with me is I've always wanted those letters after my name. I've just never wanted to go to school. So I still don't have a college education. But it's not because I couldn't get one. It's just because I'm the kind that's always wanted the title without doing the work. And you told me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I was willing to do the work, I could get the results. Well, here I was feeling all of these feelings of inadequacies and that these women were going to be so sophisticated and they were going to be so much better than me. And I'd had those feelings all my life. I needed a drink a long time before I took a drink because those feelings had always been with me. And what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is the only person who's never been on my side's me. Everybody else has been on my side. I was the one who wasn't on my side. And what happened was, is that I was so terrified that I ended up going to a luncheon. And this lady handed me a drink of sherry. And I took a drink of alcohol. I was 18 years old. Now, nothing miraculous happened. I mean, it didn't go down, you know, to my toes and out to the end of my fingers and all of a sudden I was Rita Hayworth. That didn't happen. Now, my husband talks about, you know, he took a drink, and it went down to the ends of his toes and out to the ends of his fingers, and all of a sudden his red hair turned brown and his freckles fell off, and he was 6'2". I don't recall that happening to me. The only thing I know is I took a drink of alcohol, and I could just breathe. I could just take a breath. And it seemed like alcohol allowed me to just take a breath because I was so terrified in and of myself. And I didn't have that higher power. And the big book says, in and of myself, I can't do it. But in and of myself, I could not do it. But when I took that drink of alcohol, it seemed like I could breathe. And all of a sudden, I had some social skills. I could laugh in the right places. I could nod in the right places. It seemed like I could be in these social situations and it would be okay. Now, I wasn't, my drunkalogue is so boring. I'm one of these people that took some of these tablets that make you a little sleepy, really put you, pass you out practically, and drink alcohol. This is the kind of alcoholic I am. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. I am not a party girl. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. One time somebody says, Polly, you go to AA like most people go to cocktail parties. I said, boy, you should have seen me when I was going to cocktail parties. I was just standing there like, you know, trying to breathe, just be some kind of, you know, nod or laugh or just don't laugh wrong, you know, don't make it in the wrong place. If they say their mother died, don't laugh. Don't laugh. You know, just those kind of things. Just trying to have some social graces. And alcohol allowed me to do that. And I didn't go out. I was not a party girl. I felt like I was just trying to survive. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the family afterwards. What I love about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is what it does and how it puts our families back together. This is a family disease. This is a disease that destroys families. And I'm an alcoholic mom. And women like me today would not be allowed to have their children. Because you see, I am a child abuser. And I am a child abuser in every way. I have emotionally, spiritually, physically abused my children. My children have paid a terrible price for having a mother for an alcoholic. And it's not because I didn't love my children. I did. I love them with all my heart. I just couldn't seem to help doing what I did. I couldn't get up in the morning and take care of my children. I couldn't get them off to school. I couldn't put them to bed at night. I was incapable of being able to do those things. And I'd love to tell you that I could blame my husband, but he wasn't there. I know one time not too long ago, well, it was a long time ago, it was about 15 years ago, my son was talking to his then-to-be wife, and she was talking about her mom being a single mom. And my son James says, well, my mom was a single mom. I said, I was not a single mom. You had a dad. And he said, but Mom, he was never there. And here I was, the parent of these two little boys, incapable of parenting those children. And not because I didn't love them, because I did. I was absolutely incapable of taking care of them. The disease of alcoholism traumatizes children. And I want to tell you a couple of stories because, you see, I don't ever want to forget these stories. And it says that, you know, I don't want to forget the past. I'm not going to dwell on it. And, you know, I'm not going to live in morbid reflection because if I live in morbid reflection, I can't be of use to anyone else. But the thing about it is I want to remember where alcohol took me. And alcohol took me to a place that I could not take care of my children. And because I took barbiturates and tranquilizers and drank alcohol, when we pass out, we don't breathe very good. And many is a time I've come to with my oldest son screaming at me, saying, Mom, wake up, are you dead? And my youngest son, who is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to hear him talk, talks about being a little boy, maybe 11 or 12 years old. He says he can't remember exactly. But he gets up one morning and his mother is passed out on the kitchen floor. And what James does is he looks, he assesses the situation. He looks at me, he steps over me, he gets his cereal down, he gets a bowl down, he gets the milk down, he puts them together, he puts the milk back and the cereal back, steps back over me, sits down and eats his breakfast. He says, you know, somehow I just don't think that's a normal reaction to that situation. But that's what he did. He had ceased to feel. He had ceased to feel what was going on. I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because for over 29 years, nobody, I have not come to see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes because of something I'm doing. And for 29 years, no one's had to step over me because I'm passed out on the floor. And that's a gift. That's a gift. You know, sometimes I sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I've got one of these stories. You're going to hear a little bit more about that. I got, you know, you hear that people come into Alcoholics Anonymous. They get these great jobs. They get all this stuff. And, you know, they have one of these rags to riches stories. I kind of have one of those riches to rags stories. And you know, you'll sit around and like, when am I going to get mine? You know, they have theirs and they have theirs. And then I have to sit and reflect. And the miracle is that I'm sober today. I'm sober today, and those kind of things are not happening in my life. I am not hurting people because of something I'm doing, and for that I'm grateful. And you guys have taught me really good, because now if I hurt somebody's feelings, or if I go off on them, or if I'm, you know, Miss Nasty Rude, I'll tell you what, it eats my lunch. I'm really grateful for that today. That I can feel like that. That I have that kind of conscience. I'm just so grateful. At any rate, I'm just going to tell you a few things that brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. I pretty much slept through it all. So I was sitting, Barbara and I were talking, and Barbara happens to be sponsored by Michael, and I'm always saying, God, I wish I had Michael's story. You know, I wish I'd have gone to bed with, you know, with one-legged ministers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I had some excitement in your life. It's just like, you know, there's no excitement here. I'd just like to tell you some things that brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a blackout drinker, and I had a car wreck in Irving, Texas, right where the Dallas Cowboys play football. And we have these turnarounds, and they're like bridge abutments, and you can do turnarounds on the highways in Texas. And I just hit one of those head-on and totaled an automobile. Well, I got out of my car, and I walked to a phone booth, and I called the police and told them that my car had been stolen. And lo and behold, here comes the police with my husband. And I'm taken to the Irving police station, and I get to see that look in the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he said, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" And on the way home, my husband said, "Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from our house, and I wish you would go." And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. Now, this was no fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. And I entered this treatment center, and I loved what I saw there. All of a sudden, we started being taken to AA meetings two or three times a day. And I got, you know, one of the things that I love is to be an attraction. I loved it. And what you have in this meeting is an attraction. You know, when people walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't know about the big book, and they don't know about the steps, and they're just dying. They're just dying. And I want to be an attraction. I want to be something that you're attracted to. And the laughter, that's the thing. The fellowship is what we're attracted to, the fellowship. Because a newcomer doesn't know what a step is. They don't know what a tradition is. And what are they, you know, as my husband says, somebody says, "Do you have a big book?" My husband, when he got here, said, "No, and I don't have a little book either." You know, it's like, what is that? But what they see now, if somebody walks into this room, a newcomer, and you see people who are enthusiastic about life, who are smiling and are happy, I want to be an attraction to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what you're going to see, is the attraction. And that's what I saw. I fell in love with the laughter in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I fell in love with that laughter. Now, there was something down deep inside of me that just kept saying, "Polly, people like you just don't become alcoholics." And I don't know what kind of people become alcoholic, but I didn't think I did. And I love what Dr. Thiebaud says. Dr. Thiebaud said there's two characteristics found in every alcoholic: grandiosity and defiant individuality. My husband says only an alcoholic can lay in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down on him. So, you know, people like me don't become alcoholic. And while I was in this treatment center, I had a jitterhouse romance, you know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. We walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was 12-step by the man who would become my first AA sponsor. I was 12-stepped out of a motel in Euless, Texas, and I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, because now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. I can't live sober inside my own skin. I cannot live sober. Clancy has a tape out, and it's one of my favorite tapes, and I give it to people I sponsor, and it's called Alcoholism, A Disease of Perception. And you see, my perception of reality is distorted. I don't see things the way they really are. I don't hear things the way they really are. I have alcoholism. I need to suit up and show up to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I need you to keep me in touch with reality. Because without you, I can't do it. My perception of reality is distorted. On that same tape, Clancy talks about the disease of alcoholism. And I love that. Because you see, sobriety was my problem. Living sober was my problem. Because sober, I knew what kind of mother I was. I knew what kind of wife I was. I knew what kind of daughter I was, and I absolutely could not stand to be inside my own skin sober, because sober, I knew who I was, and I couldn't stand to be sober. But I had no idea. See, I didn't know about the steps, and I didn't know about the traditions, and I didn't know about the concepts. None of those things did I know about. All I knew was that sober, I can't stand me. And I left that treatment center, and I got a bottle of scotch and a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. I don't believe that there is anybody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that doesn't have an angel in your life, and that's someone who leads us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a woman in my life, and she knew absolutely nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And today I know that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way. It was just kind of closed. And she pushed it open. And she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. By God's grace, that didn't take, because I'm standing here tonight. But I need to tell you about God's grace. I am so grateful that I have such a merciful God. I am so grateful that my God is so merciful. Because if I'm here to tell you, if I got what I deserve, I hope you're not sitting next to me. Because what I deserve is not what I've gotten. I have been given such a beautiful life, and I get to walk in grace. And everybody who walks through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous is given the gift. The gift of grace is a free gift. We don't have to do anything to earn it. I get to walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and take a seat. And if I'm willing to do the work, I get to stay. There's a beautiful man in Long Beach that died 3 years ago, and his name was Frank Honeycutt, and he was the finest man I have ever known. And Frank used to say, Alcoholics Anonymous is not for those who want it. Alcoholics Anonymous is not for those who need it. Alcoholics Anonymous is for those who do it. Because you see, if I don't do it, I don't get to stay. I get the gift. It's given to me free. I walk in, I take a seat, and I begin to be willing to do the work that it takes to stay sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The very tragic thing is that most people who walk through that door, more people than stay, lay that gift on the seat and walk out again. It's a gift. Alcoholics Anonymous. I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous. What happens for me is I end up going to a treatment center because I, in 1977, wasn't any different than 2006. And that is if you try to commit suicide, they're going to put you on one of those lovely little 72-hour holes and send you to a psychiatric hospital. And that's what they did to me. And they put me in that psychiatric hospital for 72 hours, which was enough time for my husband to obtain a court order from a Fort Worth judge that said I was a detriment to myself and others, and I was court committed to treatment. So I was sent to treatment against my will. Now, I'm really grateful for that because I needed to be in that treatment center. I needed to go there. I needed whatever they had to say because by God's grace and this program, I haven't had a drink since. I entered that program on April the 11th of 1977, and by God's grace and this program, I've been sober ever since. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says on page 164 that if we stay spiritually fit, that great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. And I want to share those great events that have come to pass. I entered that treatment center against my will. I didn't want to be there, and they even made me stay there. It was supposed to be 28 days, you know. I was supposed to get my big book in 28 days. And 28 days, they didn't think that I was ready to leave, and they kept me there longer. But you know what? I am so grateful for the gifts that have been given me. And I am so grateful for the people who have been put in my life. And I didn't want them to be there. And I don't know what happened in that treatment center. But you know, I couldn't stop drinking. I drank when I should have showed up. I can remember going to I was to attend one of my son's school functions, and he said, "Don't you dare show up at my school because I'm ashamed of you. I can't show up at my children's functions. I can't stay sober for important dates. I can't stay sober no matter what." But God in this program is so strong that one day I cannot drink no matter what, and the next day I'm sober. I'm sober. Just, phew. God just lifts it. Just takes it right away. Surrender. I don't understand it. But one of the things I've been told by my sponsor is that if God was so small for me to understand, He wouldn't be big enough to do the things He does. But what happens is here I was, a person who cannot stop drinking no matter what, and I'm sober. By God's grace and His gift, I'm sober. I left that treatment center, and I was told to get a sponsor. And I'm a person who had a man sponsor. My first sponsor was a man. He had been a Monsignor priest, a captain in the Navy, and an only child. And I believe that God gives us exactly what we need. Because I needed Frank, because I had all those excuses. It's because I'm an only child. That's what's wrong with me. No, it's the Baptist church, and on and on and on. It's the U.S. Air Force. And Frank was just knocking holes in everything, every excuse that I had. He was knocking a hole in it. And Frank, I often say, Frank was a psychologist, he was a Rother, and he was a priest, and he was sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've often said that Frank healed me mind, body, and soul. But what happened was Frank gave me this program. He gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He gave me the program. I was in treatment. I was in a 5-step program. And I don't know if any of you have gone to treatment like that and been in a 5-step program. But I thought I had done a 4-step. But my 4-step was one of those things, you know, I was born, you know, one of those autobiographies. Frank told me that made a good novel, but it didn't do anything for inventory. So he began to take me through the book, and he put me in the inventory, and he started to talk about what's my part in it. Well, I've stopped talking about my part because of Bob D. I don't know if any of you have heard him do his workshop on surrender, but he's so good. And he says, the big book says, my mistakes. It does not say my part. Because if it's my part, I'm going to take this piece of tissue paper, and this is my part. This is your part. So, my mistakes. So I've learned differently about that. And so you're never too old to learn. I mean, it's always been in the big book. That's always been there. But I had always called it my part. But what he did is he gave me the tools to be able to live and become responsible and accountable for my actions past and present. And he told me to get busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Start shaking hands with newcomers. And when somebody walks through the door, you know, he'd say, you go over there and you shake their hand and you welcome them and you share your experience, strength, and hope. And I would say, well, I don't have anything to share. I'm so new myself. And he says, if you have 30 minutes of sobriety more than they have, you share that 30 minutes. You share your experience, strength, and hope. That's how you're going to stay sober. And I'm so grateful, because one of the things that Frank was really into was in AA Becomes of Age. And I wanted to learn, he got me into the history. And he started talking about, you know, these people went through the steps and they got out and they started helping other alcoholics. And they may have a day or two of sobriety. What makes you think you can't help anybody? What would AA be if you were around? Do we have to wait till you have a year of sobriety before you can help anybody? What would have happened to AA with somebody like you around? And I mean, just not kind things, you know, just not really kind things. But I'm so grateful that I was taught to get busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just like you are, just like this group is. What's the best place to put a newcomer? I think put them a greeter at the door. That's how you get to know people. The best place in the world for a newcomer. How are you? I'm scared of people. Good, you go greet. You scared of people? You need to be shaking everybody's hand that comes in. This is how we do it. Doesn't seem like it ought to work. You know, one of the things is, he used to say, clean up the coffee pots, wash the cups. That's before we had styrofoam cups. And then I came to Washington, and we wash the cups because we're very, you know, we take care of the ecology. But now we're back to washing cups. But one of the things, do this, empty ashtrays. What is that going to do with my sobriety? He says, I don't know. Just keeps you coming back. Just keeps you coming back. Doing the things that's taking actions contrary to the way I feel. Doing things that don't make any sense, but just doing them because I was told to do them. When I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in the first 3 years of my sobriety, I was not a program of attraction. I had to hit a bottom that was as devastating as the bottom that I had hit behind alcohol and drugs, and that was behind relationships and sex. And one of the things that I hear all the time is, nowhere in the big book does it say don't get in a relationship for the first year of your sobriety. No, it's not in the big book, but I'll tell you one thing. If an alcoholic has a number two problem, it's relationships. Our number one problem is alcohol. And I was just looking for love in all the wrong places. I just knew if you'd love me enough, I'd feel okay. I just knew if you'd just give it to me. See, I didn't understand it wasn't going to work like that. That what I was going to have to do was reach out and give it to you, and then it would come back to me. You know, that's what psychologists talk about. They're always saying, do it for yourself. Do it for yourself. Well, I can tell you, doing it for myself got me that seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't until I started doing it for you that I began to feel better. Until I started working with somebody else, till I started sweeping floors, washing cups, making coffee, doing anything but thinking about myself. And at 3 years of sobriety, Dave came to me and he said, Polly, and Dave knew me. He knew me. Dave knew more about me than he needed to know. And Dave came to me at 3 years of sobriety and he says, Polly, I'm in love with you, but I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And things like that aren't supposed to happen to people like me. And on October the 27th of this year, Dave and I were married 26 years. And that is a great event that has come to pass. And I want you to know what's the best event of all is that I am absolutely crazy about this man. I am absolutely crazy about Dave. And Dave loves Alcoholics Anonymous as much as I do. And one of the things that I say, and I know that maybe it doesn't seem to make any sense, but Dave and I have absolutely nothing in common but AA. That's it. I am married to this man who loves to backpack and kayak and rock climb and, I mean, all of that stuff just seems like work to me. And, you know, Dave takes his guys and, you know, they go up on a mountain and they have a camp out and does things really different than me. And I'm one of these people that I love the women in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it. I just love to sponsor women. And I'm just on that telephone, you know, all day long, all the time. I just love the women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you have never had a relationship, now I'm not a guy, but I feel like it's probably the same thing. But I know that the relationship that began to teach me about intimacy was the relationship I had with my sponsor, and then the relationship I've had with the women I sponsor. Because I'm telling you, I was married 22 years the first time, and I did not have a clue how to have a relationship. And Dave asked me to marry him, and one of the things that we both, I'm Dave's fourth wife. And as one of our Al-Anon friends likes to tell Dave, Dave, you're the only common denominator in all four of those marriages. So, and I was married the first time for 22 years. I suffered, you know. And one of the things that Dave and I knew is we knew how to take hostages, but we didn't know how to have a relationship. And so Dave and I began to talk to people who had relationships. And my AA sponsor had left the priesthood, and he had married a Taiwanian woman that he had been in love with for years. And Frank looked at Dave and I, and he says, if you want a good marriage, you and Dave plant yourself in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you nurture yourself with the steps and the traditions and the concepts. And if you do that, you'll grow strong like two oak trees. And one day you'll look up and you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends. And that's how we grow in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm also a member of Al-Anon, and I have an Al-Anon sponsor. And Sally and Albert were almost married 50 years before Albert died. And Sally and I used to go to these women-to-women where you Al-Anon and AA go, and we go to these women's conferences, and Sally would open up her suitcase, and she'd have all these love notes in her suitcase. My God, they were almost married 50 years. And I said, I want what you have. I want a marriage. I want romance in my marriage. I want to still have that romance. And Sally says, well, there's some magic words, and those magic words are, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. And you know what I learned? You don't even have to be the one who's wrong to say that. Because I can remember what Frank Honeycutt used to say. He says, Polly, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? So Dave and I have learned those magic words. And then we met this couple in Omaha who took Dave and I through the traditions in our relationship. And now today we work the traditions in our relationship. And I'm so grateful for those people who have been in my life, who have helped us to have the marriage that we have today. And the good news is that Dave can be the kind of guy he is, and he's also a computer geek, and I kick computers that don't work. I mean, I just have no patience with it whatsoever. And he's a computer geek. And I mean, it's just like, it seems like, you know, nothing works there between him and I as far as our interests go. I get in the bed at night and I read a novel, a really juicy murder mystery, you know, novel. And Dave's reading Omni or some book like that, you know, and wants to talk about string therapy and, you know, just way, way up here. So far above my head, I got lost in the shuffle. But the good news is that we love Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of this program, we've allowed each other to go be the best we can be. You just go be the best you can be. And I'm so grateful for that. Tomorrow I'm going to do a workshop on emotional sobriety. And one of the hugest emotions that I have been graced to be healed from is the emotion of jealousy. And talk about a huge character defect. When I came... Oh, that's my phone. I am so sorry. I know better. I promise you, I know better. God is always doing this to me. I just have to stay humble. I'm always embarrassed about something. Oh, my God. Anyway, I can't even remember where I was. Oh, jealousy. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Anyway, because when Dave and I got married and when we were younger, and, you know, we were younger at one time, and I was so jealous. And I sponsor the most gorgeous women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And all of them are younger than me and thinner than me, and they adore Dave, and Dave adores them. And I had a lot of problems with jealousy. It was very hard for me. But I am so grateful today that God has removed that character defect, and that I am not, today I understand, if I get that jealousy, the only relationship that needs any attention is my relationship with God. That's the relationship. Dave and I started to walk this journey, and Dave and I have had, life has been in session. Dave and I have been married 26 years, and Dave's been sober a little over 30, and I've been sober a little over 29 years. And life's been in session for all of that time. It's not been, we walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's been a bed of roses. It hasn't been. But one of the things, as I look back on the life I've had in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the growth is that there has been so many opportunities to grow. So many opportunities have been given us. And I can remember one time when I was sitting in a meeting in Texas. I got sober in a little town called Hearst, Texas. I went to a treatment center in Dallas, but this is a little town between Dallas and Fort Worth. And I remember there was this just old redneck guy, you know, and he was leaning back against the wall with a chair tilted back. And somebody came in, they were complaining about they lost their job and their wife left them, and I don't remember what all he was saying. And this old guy just stood back there and says, "Well, it looks to me like you had about 5 ways to grow today and you blew them all." And so today I say I've had a lot of opportunities to grow. And I just want to share a little bit of that. Dave and I went to a couples meeting for a lot of years, for about 13 years when we were in Southern California. And one night I just got one of these huge ahas. And that was that as they were going around the room, this couple were talking about, they were getting married and they were going to have stepchildren. Well, Dave had 2 and I had 2. You want to put some strain on a marriage? Put some stepkids together. That'll put a strain on a marriage. And I thought, well, God, we've done that. Dave had 2 and I had 2. We've done that. And then the next couple was coming around and they were talking about that they had this drug-addicted kid that they were going to send out to the desert and to turn off. And I thought, well, God, 3 out of 4, you know, 3 of our kids were alcoholics, are alcoholics and drug addicts. You know, 3 out of 4, that's not too bad, I guess. And then the fourth one, then they were talking about that they had this, the other one was talking about they had this child in Woodrow, Calabasas, which is a psychiatric hospital out in the valley. And I thought, oh, well, my oldest son has grave emotional and mental disorders. And I thought, God, we've done that. And then the next couple were talking about financial problems and how it looked like they were going to lose their house and maybe their business. And I thought, God, in 1993, the bottom fell out of aerospace in Southern California. My husband lost his job and couldn't find a job. He's a computer scientist and couldn't find a job for 2 years. And in that 2 years, I couldn't float our boat. And we ended up losing our house and having to file bankruptcy and just all of this stuff. And I'm just thinking, you know, horribly, horribly embarrassed and humiliated. And my AA sponsor, Dottie, she's, you know, she would say, you know, you get up. And I've watched Dottie walk through such adversity in her life. And I've watched her do it with grace and dignity. And Dottie says, you get up and you tell the truth, even though it feels really bad. And I was talking to Frank one day, and I said, I can't stand up behind the podium and tell them that we're having to file bankruptcy and that our house is being foreclosed on. What will they think? They'll wonder what step we're working. What will they think? And Frank says, it's none of your business what they think. But your very life depends on what you think of them. But what they think of you doesn't matter. Your job is to take your life experience and to share it. That's what the book says. The book tells me that is your greatest asset. That's the greatest thing I have to offer in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, is my experience, strength, and hope. And I didn't want to tell those things because I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed to tell that. And I thought about that. And I thought, my God. And I can remember when that was happening. And Dave looked at me one day and he says, you know, Polly, Janis Joplin sang a song that Chris Christopherson wrote. And that was Bobby McGee. And he was talking about freedoms having nothing left to lose. And he says, Polly, we have God, we have AA, and we have each other. And as long as we have that, we're fine. We're absolutely fine. And we are. I want to quickly tell you a little bit about our kids. 6 years ago, we lost Dave's son. And his son was sober 8 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when we lost him. And Mike died of AIDS, but he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when he called his dad said, Mike, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And while Mike was, when the whole family had gathered when Mike was dying, we hadn't seen our daughter for 15 years because Kim was on the streets of Denver doing what women do in order to support an alcohol and a cocaine habit. And the hospice nurse said, you know, I don't know what Mike's waiting on, but he's waiting on something. He's not ready. He won't leave right now. He's waiting on something. And in came Kim, and she had 8 months of sobriety. And Dave was able to give her in that following March a one-year cake at Monday Night Seal Beach, which was our home group in California. Great events will come to pass. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone. And he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, he was the one that said, don't show up at my school because I'm ashamed of you. And God willing, in the creek don't rise, James will have 23 years of sobriety come January the 3rd. And that's a great event that's come to pass. And Kelly, his wife, she has 17 years of sobriety. And that's a great event that's come to pass. And James and Kelly have 3 children. And their first child was born deaf. And I'm here to tell you I had my fist at God. I mean, you know, look how many people I help. Look what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somehow that going right back to that disease of alcoholism, that it's all about me. How could we have a deaf child? But you know, God, I can't question God. My perception of reality is distorted. I didn't know anything about deaf people. But you know, I know a lot about deaf people today. And I want you to know that Ryan is 13 years old. He is totally integrated into public school. And he has made the honor roll 3 years in a row. He is handicapped in no way. And that is because of what you've done for his mom and dad. Because you have relieved his mother and father of the bondage of self. Because it never costs too much, it never takes too much time. They are always willing to give of themselves to their children, and especially to Ryan, who has a... Because it's very difficult to have a child with special needs. Absolutely great events. My oldest son is not an alcoholic, and I'm a person who suffered a lot of depression. I would get my hands on everything that Bill Wilson has written because I understood that kind of depression. And if you've never had it, God bless you. I hope you never do. But I was one of those people that have. And my oldest son was like me. And I understood him because Russ was one of those people that would hurt himself because he couldn't stand the emotional pain, so he would hurt himself physically. And I understood that because I'd done that. And I used to sit around, I would go all over and I'd find Al-Anons that I knew that would be the perfect sponsor for Russ. And what has happened is that Russ ended up marrying this Catholic girl. And what happened is Russ became a Catholic. I never thought about that. I mean, that never occurred to me. And what I'm really grateful for is that my children have a higher power, and it's not me. And I'm so grateful that you have taught me to allow them to have their journey, to go on their journey, and for me to just be there and support them. And it's really hard because I am very opinionated. You know, the first thing that returns to a sober alcoholic is his opinion. You know, and I've got a lot of them. I had a lot of opinions of how things ought to be. And Russ and Cheryl have two little girls. And last January, we were in California, and I picked up Katie and Jesse from school, and I was walking to the car, and Katie said, "Grandma, I want to be just like you." She says, "When I grow up." She says, "I hear you on your phone, and you talk to people, and you help people, and I want to be just like you." Because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I am a dynamite grandma, an absolutely dynamite grandma. And it's so much fun. It's so much fun to be a grandma. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I would have self-destruct. The very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But I have a life today beyond my greatest expectations. I am the mother I've always wanted to be. I have been a faithful wife for over 26 years. And that's a great event that's come to pass because I never was able to do that. And I've been able to do that with the principles that you taught me and the values that you taught me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I travel, I have the opportunity to travel. And when I go somewhere in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to present myself. I'm an old lady now, but I used to be young. But what you have taught me is to suit up and show up and be an example of the program. So that when I go somewhere, my husband, the people I sponsor, and the people in my home group know that I behave as a sober, married woman. Because you've taught me how to do that. To be a program of attraction. You've taught me how to do that. My sons even did a will. And if anything happens to them, Dave and I get our grandchildren. I am a mother who abused her children. Dave and I live today at the very tippy top of Washington, in Birch Bay, Washington, just right before you go across to the Canadian border. And Dave and I have a beautiful A-frame house that looks out over Birch Bay. In 1993, we lost our house. I don't know how you get from here to here. I don't know how you do that. All I know is that God has been so generous and so giving. You know, in one of our stories, it talks about the keys to the kingdom. And one of the things that God is willing to do for any of us is give us the keys to the kingdom. And I am so grateful that tonight I have the keys to the kingdom. God bless you. I love you.